Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We've got a real bumper Gegenpod for you today. Two former Socceroos, Scott McDonald and Michael Zullo, just back from Qatar to break down all four games overnight and look ahead to the Socceroos' do-or-die clash with Denmark. I'm your host, Teo Pelizzeri. This is the Optus Sport Football Podcast. Let's get in to the Gegenpod. Yes, indeed. We've got a couple of former Socceroos with us on the Gegenpod today to break down the overnight action in the World Cup and then have a big look ahead to Australia's vital game against Denmark. We're joined once again by former Socceroo Scott McDonald. Scotty, it's great to have you back.
Yes, great to be back as well. And I can see we've got a newcomer here, which is good. Always good. So someone else to argue, not Bridgie today.
Yes, former Socceroo 10 caps, Michael Zullo, who joins us, of course, a lengthy career in the A-League and also overseas as well. Michael, it's great to have you with us, and I understand that you've only just got back from Qatar, so have you got a story for us about your time over there?
Well, I've got a few stories. I'm not sure which ones I can share on here, but I just got back last night. It was an incredible experience. I was there for 4 days in total. Saw three games and loved every second of it.
Which three games did you manage to catch?
I saw the first one was England versus USA, the second one was Australia versus Tunisia, and then we rounded it off with Germany versus Spain. So I saw some really high quality football, and obviously the Australia game was probably the highlight for me.
I was going to say, you saw some really high quality football and you also got to see the England-USA game. So commiserations on catching that one. Let's start with the USA though, because they are through to the round of 16. A 1-0 win. Christian Pulisic injured himself while scoring the match-winning goal and had to be subbed off at halftime. Scott, while it's a great achievement for Greg Berhalter and the USA to get out of this group, Pulisic's injury, is that the end of their hopes right there before they have to go on and play against the Netherlands in the next round?
Look, he's been involved in both goals. He's a very important player, so it'll be interesting to see how he recovers. However, you know, USA have some quality in that front area. Timothy Weah has been excellent as well in this World Cup campaign. It was really nice to see at the end of the game. Obviously, his legend of a father there, celebrating with him as well. Look, in the USA team, for me, they started this game very, very well on the front foot. As always, when you get a goal ahead and the game kicks on, you're protecting that as well. You know you need the victory to go through. Iran only needed the draw. But it was a professional performance. And for me, their midfield's brilliant. And I talked about Musa the other day. I'm just so impressed by him. He started his career at Arsenal. He's now at Valencia, played a lot of football. And if you look at this USA team now compared to what it was previous, there's a lot of these players predominantly playing in European football.
Michael, having only just seen the USA in their game against England, what did you make of the result and also the performance against Iran? Because they probably came out of that game happy with a point to keep control of their own destiny, but how did you see sort of the progression of this team today?
Yeah, I was really impressed by them. As Scotty touched on, they've got a young crop of players that are coming through top leagues in Europe and top clubs. And I think from seeing them firsthand against England, you know, all the expectation was on England, obviously, but they're such a dynamic young side. Weston McKennie is one player that really stands out for me, a Juventus player. And I think they're showing promising signs that they could probably go deeper into this tournament. Whether they can obviously reach the final and win is another question. But I think there's some really promising signs, and they're a young, exciting side. So I kind of like what I see.
Let's leave Iran there. They are eliminated, as are Wales, after they crashed out 3-0 to England. A double for Rashford and Foden at the start of the second half, killing off the game. England put key players on ice. They subbed off Harry Kane and Declan Rice after the first two goals. Scott, should England be worried about Harry Kane's form, given the World Cup so far, or is Gareth Southgate perhaps in a position where if it ain't broke, don't fix it?
Absolutely not. Everything that's good is coming through him. And if you looked at the World Cup previous to this one, France won the World Cup. Did their centre forward score a goal in it? No, he didn't. Giroud never scored a goal in the whole World Cup competition, but he was the platform for them to play off. So Harry Kane is that man. And as proven again, he's delivering some of the... Because that ball for the second goal was sublime. You ask any striker what you want to be on the end of, it's something like that. And because he is a centre forward, he knows where he wants to put it. He didn't even look up. He just put it across that six-yard box. And if you ask Michael, that's the most horriblest place for any defender to try and defend in no man's land, you call it. And it was wonderful. And the way that they sort of, you know, turned up the heat in the second half against Wales, you know, controlled the game first half. Wales have been really disappointing in this whole tournament, an aging team, disappointing with Bale as well coming off at half time. But I think Harry Kane, obviously captain, leader, doing a wonderful job. He's got bigger problems to pick from the other wide areas than he has in his number nine area.
Michael, I wanted to ask you about some of the selection questions for England going forward. In this game, they started Kyle Walker ahead of Kieran Trippier. He was then subbed off for Trent Alexander-Arnold once the game appeared safe. Trippier would come on as a sub himself later in the game. But do you think this is now the shift from Southgate that Walker will be the starter going forward and Trippier loses his place in the England team?
I'm not really sure, to be honest. I think that's a really tough scenario, especially for Gareth Southgate to choose between three really top-class right fullbacks. They've got an abundance of talent in that position. I'm a huge fan of Trippier because I think he provides a danger from set pieces as well as getting forward himself. But in saying that, you know, Kyle Walker and Trent Alexander-Arnold, you know, they probably possess similar traits. So it's a really difficult scenario, I think. It's kind of going to depend on a game-by-game scenario, or maybe Gareth Southgate has a player in the back of his head that he's most confident with already. So I think whoever plays in that position is going to do the job for England. It's just unfortunate for each of them that there's so much talent around them.
Look, Kyle Walker's got his minutes in now, obviously come through that injury that he had. What Kyle Walker gives England as well, and Gareth Southgate, is the option, if he does start him at fullback, to go to a back three at any time he wants to. And I think with that in mind and him getting minutes in this game from his physicality standpoint and what he gives the team, I think he'll get the nod. I really do. You know, in the knockout stages, I think that's why he's come back to play these minutes in the last game. And as we've seen, Trippier's flexible. He can play on the left, he can play on the right. And again, you've got Trent Alexander-Arnold who gets minutes in this game, but someone that's so unfortunate to have the level of quality of opposition. Then you've got Ben White, who can't even get a minute either, who's top of the league in the Premier League. So it just shows you the quality that they've got in that position.
Well, another selection debate no doubt will be inspired by Rashford scoring this double, because Bukayo Saka was an unused sub for this one. England didn't need him, to be fair. Scotty, does Saka come straight back in, or does Rashford now keep his place?
This is the hardest question of them all. And then you've got Phil Foden as well, who the English public now, it was Grealish in the last competition at the Euros. They all wanted to play from the start. Phil Foden's the one now everyone's asking, particularly with teams that sit off them, to go and open up defences. So he's got real selection headaches in terms of who he starts. Does Raheem Sterling get the nod? You know, that's a bigger question for me than Saka. I think Saka comes back in. It's a case of who's going to get the nod on the other side with Sterling, Foden or Rashford. And I actually think it probably will be Rashford. So I think he'll go Saka and Rashford for me.
The feeling on the ground after the England-USA game in Qatar was that, you know, it was a feeling of bewilderment that Foden wasn't getting any minutes. And I think he does the business for Manchester City every weekend in the Premier League, and he's such a dangerous player. I think there's some frustration around Sterling. He's maybe not in the best form of his career as well at club level. So I think for me, it's got to be Rashford, because he provides such a goal-scoring threat. And Saka is probably the form player in the England side as well. So for me, I'm definitely going with Saka and Rashford and Harry Kane in the middle. I've got no doubts that when the time comes, when that opportunity presents itself, he'll be scoring a goal for England and probably putting him through to the next round.
Well, that next round is against Senegal. England have never lost to a team from CAF, the African Federation. Scott, have they looked like they'll threaten against the good sides, or are we looking a bit too far ahead? Do they have to be careful against a potential speed hump like Senegal that could trip them up?
They definitely do. You know, the African teams throw things at you, and they're so unpredictable, Tio. As we've seen, they started this tournament slowly, not just Senegal, but Ghana. Morocco obviously got off to a decent start, but the African nations are slowly now building into this tournament, and it seems to be, obviously, when the tournaments are outside of Europe, they seem to turn it on a little bit more. So, and I think Senegal, just with their pace, their power, their unpredictability, trickery wise, I think Sarr's a big threat for them. He was magnificent for Senegal in the game itself overnight, and obviously his penalty took it wonderfully. So I think they're a big threat. England will dominate the ball as per usual, but they've got to be careful, obviously, on that counter-attacking moment. And it'll probably, albeit USA did ask questions at times, but this will be the biggest test for them from a defensive point of view. And you know, now question marks may be asked of Harry Maguire. He's been magnificent for them thus far. But now I think with the threat, the pace in behind, that's going to be the biggest questions asked of them up till now.
I'm definitely not, thrilled about England's form to this point. I think Senegal are going to provide a massive threat in terms of physicality. I think that's going to really challenge the English team. But in saying that, they're all, Premier League players, and they play against super physical opponents on a weekly basis. So I don't know if that's going to be a problem for them. I just think going forward, I'm just not sure if they have they've definitely got the attacking flair. I'm not really loving the chemistry in the squad at the moment. They haven't really impressed me thus far. But in saying that, with that much attacking flair, it can all just come together kind of in the blink of an eye, and before you know it, they can be in the World Cup final. So I definitely think they're going to beat Senegal. What comes next, I'm not so sure.
Now, just quickly on the defeated team Wales, it was a sad end for Gareth Bale. He did score the penalty against America, but overall he did not have a great World Cup. And Scott, as you mentioned, he was subbed off at halftime in this one. But in the post-match, he said that he's not retiring. So he's just won the MLS. Wales obviously still idolise him, and Euro 2024 is only just around the corner. Scott, where to from here for Gareth Bale? I mean, does the Wales national team move on from him rather than vice versa? Or do you think that as long as Bale wants to wear that red shirt, Wales will keep picking him?
Look, they'll keep picking him. From a marketing perspective, it makes absolute sense for the Wales national team to keep him around as well. And obviously the Welsh public absolutely love him as well. He's idolised. He's a legend of the game in Wales now for what he's done, not just for in club-wise, winning umpteen, European Champions Leagues, but, what he's done for Welsh football qualifying, their first World Cup since, I think it's 1974, if you correct me, Tio. And obviously getting to the Euros.
I think it's 58.
Sorry. There's all these different numbers flying in my head at the moment. But Robert Page is going to have a difficult decision to make sooner or later, what he does with him. Keep him around the squad. From all accounts, he's absolutely wonderful around all the boys. He's got a great connection with them. You see that if you look into their social media page and how a big part he plays. He's not big time or separate from the group. He's well and truly part of that. It's sad because of what we see. We see the decline of these players. It happens to us all at some point. But in terms of their strength and what they give you and the entertainment that they've brought you over the years, and then they slowly, decline a little bit. You've got to find a way to still achieve what you want to achieve. And it's a lot more difficult in a Welsh team than it is in an Argentina team or a Portuguese team for Bale, unfortunately. But he's had a wonderful career. If he continues to play, then it's, I think it's great. And I think it brings attention to the Welsh national team no matter what.
Yeah, look, I think the thing with Gareth Bale is he's a perennial winner. I mean, he's won so many titles in his career. I actually saw a stat recently. The only time he hasn't won a trophy over the last however many years that he's been playing has been the time he spent at Tottenham, which I've really enjoyed having some Tottenham fans as mates. But look, I think for a player of his stature, it's kind of up to him to call time on his international career, and I think he's earned that. And we've seen a similar thing, obviously, with Portugal and Argentina, and in terms of Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi, and maybe they're at their own, completely different level themselves. But But I think for him, it's kind of whenever he wants to call time. A player of that stature, as Scotty said, he would probably bring so much to that change room in terms of atmosphere and in terms of mentality that maybe for him, he just wants to go out on a high and he can choose that time. But while he's still hungry and he's still feeling competitive, I see no reason why he can't keep playing for Wales.
Let's quickly fly through the Group A games then. Senegal 2, Ecuador 1. We've spoken about how they'll face England in the next round. Ecuador scored an equaliser in this game, but just 3 minutes later, a winner for Koulibaly and for Senegal. So they advance and Ecuador go out. Disappointing for them as well, Scott, given that they won the opening game against Qatar. They really outplayed the Netherlands in their one-all draw, and you can understand why there were tears at full time that it's all over.
Yeah, it's heartbreak, isn't it? You know, because before this game, we're talking very, very positively about Ecuador and their chances getting through and how good they look, particularly like you said there, Tio, in terms of their performance against the Netherlands, and unlucky not to come away with, you know, maximum points in that game. Then to go into this game, and there's the danger, isn't it, of only needing a point within a game. And then you end up with absolutely nothing. But you've got to say that on the night that Senegal were the better team and deserved, you know, their 3 points. But within a blink of an eye, it's crazy to think that you can start the tournament that well and still be, you know, going through the exit door at the end of, you know, the three games as well. So as always, it's not how you start something, it's how you finish it. And it's been that case for Ecuador in this moment. And yeah, a really sad way for Ecuador to go out. And then obviously Ener Valencia, who's had a very good World Cup, obviously scoring 3 goals again and looking to try and break more records, but that won't happen now.
And in the other group game, Netherlands 2, Qatar 0. No risk for the Netherlands of slipping up in this one. Cody Gakpo scoring first, Frankie de Jong early in the second half to kill off the contest. Michael, Qatar go home without a point and a goal difference of -6. It's the worst performance from a World Cup host in history, and only Canada can end up with a worse record depending on their final group game. So in all likelihood, Qatar is going to be 32nd and last of all the teams that made it into this tournament. Was it worth all the effort and the trouble?
It's a tough one. I think, considering all the noise around the World Cup, there's probably some questions about whether it was worth it. But I think they've definitely underperformed. You know, I think they, if you look at their performance in the last Asia Cup, people were probably expecting a lot more from them. So it was obviously a big disappointment to see that they weren't able to put together any kind of performance that was up to scratch. But the country itself still hosted a World Cup, and it's still going on. And I guess the jury's out on how this World Cup will turn out, you know, whether it will be remembered as a great one or not so. But in terms of is it worth it? Absolutely. I think for a country to host a World Cup's a massive occasion. And it's just a shame that they couldn't turn up and provide a performance that probably they were hoping for.
Well, you touched on there in terms of the World Cup and questioning or asking the question, you know, it's up to others to determine if it's going to be a memorable one or not. Obviously, you went there as a fan this time compared to previous. What was your thoughts on it? Because you were on the ground, so you'll know better than us in terms of the atmosphere and what it's been like going to the games and what the fans are like. Is there many of the actual, is it all local fans, or is there a lot of internationalists actually going to these games?
Yeah, look, I'm going to be honest. I think this is something that I've been thinking about a lot since I stepped foot in Qatar, and I was very underwhelmed. You know, I've been to previous World Cups as a fan as well, and it did not have that World Cup feel for me, I'll tell you straight up. The fans, the foreign fans just weren't there in the numbers that I've experienced before, and I can tell you firsthand that the atmosphere inside the stadiums has been pretty, I don't know what the right word is, but pretty lackluster, to be completely honest with you. The Australia vs. Yeah, very dull, very dull. And I think that comes from the fact that there's a lot of neutrals in the stadium. There's a lot of just casual football fans that have come from, I'm not sure. I mean, there's been various reports of where they come from, but look, if I compare the Spain-Germany game with the England-USA game, they were very similar. There was actually a ton of USA fans in the stadium and a fair amount of English as well. Spain versus Germany, absolutely not. It was very, very dull. But if I compare that to the Australia-Tunisia game, that was by far and away the best experience of the World Cup, purely because of the fact that it was full of Tunisians. And they brought an incredible atmosphere to the stadium. It was unbelievable. And that's kind of what you expect at a World Cup, to have fans supporting their nation, making a lot of noise inside and outside the stadium, having a great time. Unfortunately, I didn't see much of that at this World Cup.
Well, that was Michael Zullo's account being on the ground in Qatar. We are going to shift focus after this short break onto the Socceroos, looking ahead to their game against Denmark. You're listening to the Optus Sport Football Podcast. This is the Gegenpod.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the Gegenpod. We've got two former Socceroos with us today, Michael Zullo and Scott McDonald, and now it is time to get on to the Australia match against Denmark. A draw is good enough for Australia to get through, assuming Tunisia do not upset France. So many permutations. Let's begin with the starting 11. Michael, you were there watching the historic 1-0 win against Tunisia. Do you have any immediate changes you would make? I'll throw some potential questions at you. Who's starting at right back? Does Aydın Hrustić start ahead of Riley McGree? Or is there something else in the team you've seen that might be a burning question?
First and foremost, Harry Soutar's number one name on the team sheet for me. After watching him play, it's the first time I've seen him live, and I was extremely impressed by his performance, as were many other Australians who watched him that night. But He was a colossus at the back for me. So he's the first name on the team sheet. And I think at right back, it's a tough one, you know. I think obviously Nathaniel Atkinson had a tough game against France, but he was playing against the best player in the world right now. And I think that was an enormous learning curve for him. And I think he's going to benefit from that because I think he's a very, very talented young player. And then I think obviously Karacic had a bit of a tough one against Tunisia as well. So where Arnie goes with that, I'm not so sure. I'd probably lean towards Atkinson if he's fit and healthy. I just think he provides a bit more going forward and a bit more he's a bit more dynamic. So for me, that's where I'm going to go. But they're both talented players. And as for the midfield with McGree and Hrustić, that's a really tough one. I think McGree his work ethic was so high against Tunisia. I think he probably deserves to stay after getting the 3 points last time. But Hrustić is arguably the player that's playing at the highest level for Australia at the moment, and he's extremely talented. So I think it comes down to a question of which way Arnie wants to go. Does he want to go with the work ethic or a bit more ball-playing sort of talent? I think if you're going to lean towards work ethic, then McGree will probably get the nod. If he goes the other way, then obviously Hrustić will get the nod. So not quite sure which way Arnie will land on, but whoever plays, I'm confident will do the job.
It's the tried, tested, trusted. If I know Arnie well enough, I don't think he makes any changes. I think it's the same 11. There has been questions asked in terms of can they go to the well again. That's my biggest question. The work rate and the output that was put into the game against Tunisia and how well the players did it from a physical standpoint. I don't mean just from a, you know, running attribute wise, but you know how they put their bodies about as well and took the blows and were physically in the faces of the Tunisians. They're going to have to do that again. And I think Riley McGree gets the nod, like Michael touched on there, because of his work ethic and his work rate and how he pressed from the front. He more or less led the press at times because the way that you know, Denmark played very, very similar to Tunisia as well with a back three. So I think with that in mind, Riley McGree knows how to do that and he'll push on higher. And then Goodwin will stay out wide. And then you've got, obviously, Juki will push on as well. And Lecky will come in narrow and he'll take care of the three up top. And that's how they'll press. Look, and I think that Arnie will go with this to start the game and try and see if they can obviously get something successful out of that. However, if not, stay in the game for as long as possible and then make his changes from an impact perspective, like the likes of Rustic, Kowal, McLaren. I think they're probably the three that you look at. I think Goodwin's been arguably the standout player for the Socceroos as well, in terms of a real surprise in terms of getting the nod in the first place. But what he's given the Socceroos in the last two games has been wonderful. Obviously scored the goal, had the assist as well, and I think his overall play has been magnificent as well. Karacic probably gets the nod just because the team had a clean sheet. If you've had a clean sheet, albeit you've had a tough day, but you've been part of that unit, I don't think as a coach you tend to change things. So I think that back four will be the same back four as it was previous game.
Well, you touch on the fatigue there. Graham Arnold dismissed the accumulated fatigue as a mental issue, and the quote was, "Don't talk about it and it can be overcome." And Michael, this is where I wanted you to take us inside the change room, because you've played for Graham Arnold as a coach. How different is what he says to the media versus what he says to the players? Would you expect that it is largely the same sort of message internally and externally, or is what he does to sort of get the media sidetracked on one issue completely different to what he might be saying behind closed doors?
Graham Arnold's a master of not just creating the narrative, but shifting the narrative to make sure that it ties into what he's, you know, wants to push inside the change room. And I think, he's very big on using particular words and making particular statements that kind of fill the boys with confidence or make them feel a certain way. You know, I've heard that he wasn't calling France France; he was just calling them the Blues in the lead up to the France game, and things like that are very common. You know, with Arnie, he focuses a lot on the mental side of the game, and there are certain little tricks that he likes to employ to make sure that you are thinking the same way he's thinking and that you're full of confidence going into the game. And I think that's, for me, probably the biggest thing about Arnie's tenure, is that as a player, I always felt confident going into a game with Arnie. I always knew my role and I always was ready for the battle. But obviously, this is a completely different level. This is an enormous game for Australia. You know, whether he focuses on certain points, I'm not so sure. But I just know that he's going to have those boys 100% believing that they can do the job, 100% motivated, and I think they'll come out of the gates absolutely firing.
One thing I did want to ask, though, is because you played for Graham Arnold when his team was undefeated, on long streaks without losing, and emotionally and mentally you were up every single week. It seems as though Arnie's mentality first, the rest second style, shouldn't that be emotionally and mentally draining? How is it that he always finds a way to tap in to sort of the mindset of the players in order to avoid the drop-off and the letdown, especially when it's a situation like a World Cup where it is far closer to a sprint than a marathon?
Look, I think what you mentioned, I think in terms of having a bit of a burnout and stuff like that, that might be a factor at team level. But I think at international level, we're talking about three games here. We're talking about a World Cup. I think if players have got mental fatigue, there's something wrong. I think, you know, this is an enormous occasion, not just in the countries, in terms of the country, but in terms of each individual player, this could be a turning point in their career. So I think there's absolutely no concerns for me that the players are going to have mental fatigue or burnout about keeping this mentality up. I think for Arnie, he's so big on mentality that you need to buy into that if you're going to play for him. And I think the players that he's chosen, without knowing firsthand, obviously, but from my understanding of how Arnie chooses his teams, he chooses players that he knows are going to be up for it. He knows they're going to come out and kick and scratch and run all day. And the only thing I'm certain of is that Arnie will be 10 times more nervous than the players going into that game. That's the only thing I know for absolute certainty. So, I think I've got no concerns that the boys will be up for it. I know it'll be a massive game in their careers. And we at least that we can expect is total commitment from them.
You mentioned there hearing about how he referred to France as the Blues. What was his go-to to refer to some of your A-League rivals? Did he have code names, or would he refuse to say the name of a Melbourne Victory or a Western Sydney Wanderers when you were playing for Sydney FC?
Yeah. You just touched on the one that stands out for me, and that was he would remove victory from Melbourne Victory, and he would even go as far as removing the word victory from their badge when it would come up in the pre-game analysis. You know, so there was no talk about victory. It was just Melbourne, and we were going to win. You know, he spoke at length about how victory, calling them the Melbourne Victory, was a masterstroke in marketing. So I don't think he was too happy about it. But look, they're the kinds of things that he does, you know, and I think you can't really argue with him at this point. He's been such a successful manager during his career. And I think, look, whatever works for us at this point, if it gets us through to the next round, who cares?
Now, Scott, one thing that Arnie went out of his way to mention was making sure that the team didn't get carried away with the win against Tunisia. And he even went back to the win against Argentina in the Olympics. He blamed over-celebration, and he also said that social media was responsible for distracting his players. Now, is that an effective deflection in order to get maybe social media talking about themselves rather than about the team? Or do you think he actually has a legitimate point and a legitimate gripe there with perhaps Australia, the fans, getting too carried away with that win against Argentina, and it's a lesson broadly for the national team to learn from?
I think it's more a reflection rather than a deflection in terms of his experience with that, albeit it was a younger squad that went to the Olympics than what he has at his disposal now with the experience that he has within that squad itself. And I think it was more a message to the players that than the outside world about social media and getting carried away. And I think a couple of boys mentioned that in terms of the team talk of the huddle thereafter the last game, and that was probably the message as well. We don't get carried away. We've still got a job to do, amongst other things. You've gone on about there with Michael about Graham Arnold and what he says to certain people and what he says to others. And I think I touched on it in the pod the other day in terms of what he's actually saying to the players. And it's all about siege mentality, about the group itself and nothing from the outside. And some of the negativity that's gone around the group before now, and look what you've achieved, but we've achieved nothing yet. Let's go and shove it down everyone's throats even more. And I think that's the message and the motivation for the next game, particularly for the players. And Michael's right, the players will be up for this one. There's no way they're not going to be. It's just whether or not we've got enough in the well and enough quality on the day and how we keep the ball, because that was the one thing probably I was disappointed with the most. We played against a, no disrespect, a lower level of opposition that were playing basketball with us. The Danes won't do that. If you give them the ball back, they'll keep the ball, right, and they'll keep it for long spells. So we've got to make sure that we maintain possession a lot better in certain moments within the game. We did it well early on, but we're going to have to do it for a lot more of the majority of the game itself.
Michael, you haven't been afraid to weigh in on Twitter in recent times. So on Arnie's point about social media, do you understand where he's coming from about players maybe getting lost in their own hype or lost in the praise? Or is it really up to the individual rather than the coach to set the tone on these things?
No, absolutely, I understand where he's coming from. I think for me, for most of my career, I kind of stayed off social media. And now that I'm coming towards the end of it, or, you know, I'm an older player, I feel like I can get more involved in it if I so choose. But social media is a double-edged sword, you know. It's really something you need to be careful with, because obviously you can get carried away with the compliments and with the positive stuff. But by the same token, you can get massively deflated by negative criticism and stuff like that. And I think for me, even as a player, it was extremely frustrating to watch some of my teammates throughout my career. Obviously, this is a recent phenomenon, but focus more on social media and image than on football. And I think for a coach these days, I think it's a huge, huge element to make sure that players are staying grounded, not getting too carried away when it's obviously positive, but on the flip side, when it's negative, how to stay confident, you know. So I think is Graham Arnold is he making a valid point? I think absolutely. I think social media can be a tricky beast for athletes, and it should be treated with a bit of caution.
Let's shift it back onto the pitch, though. The two teams that needed a draw to go through today, Ecuador and Iran, both lost. The two teams that needed to win were able to beat them in the form of the United States and Senegal. So I'll start with you, Michael. What is our approach? Can we be on the front foot, what minute do we start letting playing for a draw creep into our heads?
Look, I think as a player, everyone's saying that you can't go into that match going for a draw, and that's absolutely correct. But as a player, you know in the back of your mind that you only need a draw. So I think for me, you have to come out of the gates firing. You have to come out first and foremost. It has to be maximum energy from Australia to set the tone early. Because if we let Denmark play, as Scotty touched on, we're talking about super talented European players here. They're not going to just turn the ball back over like Tunisia did. It's not going to be a back and forth type of match, in my opinion. I think this is going to be something that we need to be able to hold the ball and control possession at times. And I think first and foremost, as has kind of been our style recently, is we obviously need to be strong in a strong defensive block because they do possess quite a bit of talent. But look, I think we have to go out and work extremely hard. That's going to be the number one sort of factor for us. I think that's what we need to do. Look, if we can nab a goal, that would be excellent. But I think probably around the 80th minute is that obviously there's so much injury time in this World Cup, you can't really let settling for a draw creep in until it's really at the absolute death of the game. We have to keep firing for the entirety of the match, do what we can and try and win. That's the absolute goal. It has to be. Otherwise, we're inviting a lot of pressure, and I think we're playing with fire.
No player ever goes into a game looking to draw a game. Not in a million years. You go out there to play the game and try and win the game. As the game edges on, there is that thought, like Michael said, but only probably in the last 10 minutes of the game. Before those last 10 minutes, you're not on countdown. You're not looking at the clock. You're slowly looking at it, but you know you've still got a job to do. Australia need a big performance from Mitch Duke again. I think he was the catalyst as well for a lot of good things that came. It'll be a lot more difficult against the likes of Christensen, you know, at the back. You know, the physicality that they hold, it's not going to be as easy to bully them. But he needs a big performance, you know, for the Socceroos to get up the pitch and create opportunities. If he can't get a hold of that ball and get us up the pitch, then we're going to struggle. We're going to find it hard. What is in Australia's favour is, though, the Danes play similar to what Tunisia did, you know, with that back three. I think when they went to a standard 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3, however you want to look at it, Tunisia, it gave us a few more problems late in the game. Do Denmark look at that and change their system from the 3-4-3 that they play? I don't know. Only they can answer that. However, they've got options up top as well. You know, a lot of threat. We all know the threat of Eriksen being quite, but they've all been quiet to this point. They've not really, you know, created a lot of opportunities from a goal threat perspective, but there's still a massive threat. Damsgaard, for me, was excellent in the Euro 2020. He's now at Brentford. Had a quiet tournament thus far, but is an excellent player. Does Poulsen get minutes this time? He's not had any minutes so far. But one guy that probably does start for them is the guy that come on at half-time in their last game against France, and that's Braithwaite. I think he'll start the game for them and be probably the biggest threat as well and making those runs in behind. So we have to be alert to that. And, you know, like Michael touched on, our block of four has to be very, very good on the day again, and not just the block of four, but everything in front of that as well. But we have to find quality at the final third of the pitch as well and try and get Goodwin on that ball as much as we can to get those deliveries in. And I still think set pieces are a big plus point for us as well.
Well, Michael, I wanted to ask you about another Arnie quote from pregame. He said, "We're going to focus on ourselves. If we spend too much time focusing on Denmark, then you know we're doing the wrong thing." Michael, surely that's just a bit of bluff for the Danes there. Surely within the Socceroos camp, they know who they're marking. They know what the strengths of the opposition are, and they'll have a preset plan. Is it really true that the Socceroos are just focusing on themselves?
For every game, you obviously have to analyse the strengths of the opposition, but is Arnie focusing purely on our performance? I think so. Why not? This is in Australia's hands here. It's not really about, we're not playing against France this time. We're playing against a very talented Danish side, don't get me wrong. But I don't think they have the individual threats that France do. So for me, this is a time for Australia to say, you know, this is our time, this is our performance. It's up to us to go out and get this result. As we touched on, I think he keeps any anxieties or any fears that he might have, he keeps them to himself. So I think for Australia, we need to go out and do our job, and I see no reason why we can't come out with the result that we need.
Both of you are fairly confident on our starting 11, but what subs are we turning to, firstly, if we're chasing the game, and what subs are we turning to if we're containing or shutting down the game, as you mentioned, sort of post-80th or post-85th minute? Who knows how much stoppage time there'll be at the end of these World Cup games. Scott, do you have any names in mind that you want to see as first call off the bench? Because in the France game and in the Tunisia game, it was very different subs that Graham Arnold did turn to in order to... In the instance of the France game, it didn't change the game much. And in the case of the Tunisia game, it helped us get to the finish line.
Yeah, look, I don't think we'll see much change in terms of the personnel that have come on from these first two games. It's just the timing of them, like you said. Look, if we're chasing the game, I there's no doubt that we'll probably see Mabil, we'll see Qual come in for that pace injection. McLaren is a possibility now. I think he'll get the nod before Cummings does in that situation or scenario. If we're holding on, I think the likes of a Bacchus comes on just purely for his energy and his engine, and just to be that horrible type of player. Not to say he's horrible, but he does those dirty things really, really well. Could come on, and then the likes of McLaren will replace Duke at some point just from a fatigue perspective. I think that's probably the changes we'll see. If Arnie's going to make any changes, or from a defensive point of view, he'll bring on a Dejanac to shore it up if we need to. But in terms of the attacking intent, I think it will be the likes of Qual, Mabil and McLaren that we will see introduced at some point.
Yeah, similar to Scotty, I think Arnie's made it clear that there's obviously a group of players that he trusts and believes in, and that's normal within a squad. And for a game of this importance, I don't think we're going to be seeing anything out of the box here. I think it's going to be the players that he knows and trusts. I was surprised to see Bacchus come off the bench, to be honest, in the last game. It was a massive moment for him to come into the game. But I think, look, if we're chasing it, you know, it'll be the usual suspects. It'll be Mabil, Jamie McLaren. And I think if we're trying to keep a result, as Scotty said, Dejanek. But look, someone that might be a little bit left of field. But for me, if you need someone to do bring in a lot of work ethic and a lot of work rate, look no further than Cammy Devlin. He's a little energizer by that guy, and I think he's the type of guy that can absolutely nullify an opposition just from his work rate, and he's willing to come out and kick people and do the dirty work. So they're the kind of players I think we can probably expect to see in those two scenarios.
France versus Tunisia. Do France make sure that it does come down to Australia versus Denmark by beating them, or do Tunisia shake this group up with one last twist?
Absolutely no way. The French have got too much in their locker for this one. And even if they do make changes, they've just got a quality side all round. Look, they'll make it. They'll make it 3 from 3, no doubt.
Yeah, I think for me, look, it's probably a very historically sensitive game, to be honest. Tunisia versus France. There's a lot of cultural undertones there. So seeing the Tunisian support in Qatar, it's going to be a massive game for them. But I just don't think they're going to have the quality to get over the line. I think France will take it out. And it'll come down to Australia versus Denmark to see who goes through as the remaining team in the group.
And in the other group, we've got Saudi Arabia taking on Mexico. Both teams at risk of knocking each other out if they match ends in a draw, but the rewards will be there if one of them can win. Scotty, Mexico or the Saudis?
Look, I wouldn't put it past Saudi Arabia in terms of that atmosphere. Like Michael touched on with the Tunisians, the Saudi Arabians have been there in force as well, obviously only a stone throw away from Qatar. So they're going to come out in full force, and could they be the 12th man for them? Mexico have been really, really poor and disappointing to this point, been a surprise for a lot just because they've got a lot of talent in there. Do you know what? I'm going to go with the Saudis in this one. I think they can cause the upset and actually get to the last 16, which would be a massive, massive result. There you go.
Yeah, look, I'm gonna double up on that with Scotty. To be honest, I think Saudi Arabia were probably the team that was spoken about of having massive support on the ground in Qatar. Apparently they had up to 100,000 fans in Qatar for the World Cup. So I think this is a bigger occasion for them than it is for Mexico. I know that's a big statement, but I think in terms of the region where the World Cup is, I think the incentives for the Saudi team. They were unlucky not to get something out of the last game, I think. I think they're going to come away with the result. But I wouldn't be surprised if it went either way.
I was going to say, I tell you what, if they got a Rolex for beating Argentina, what do they get for reaching the last 16 of the World Cup? My goodness, that could be interesting what the king gives them for the next phase.
Rolex is on four wheels, I reckon. Okay, and lucky last one, Argentina against Poland. And Scott, I saved a stat just for you. Argentina have faced the lowest XG of all 32 teams in the tournament through the first two games. Will that affect your tip in any way?
Do you know what the best part about our game is? I'll tell you, the unexpectedcy of it. Yeah. Not the expectedcy of it. So there you go. So you can stick your XG where it fits, right? And you know, Argentina, right, have the lowest XG, but the little magician turns up when you least expect it and goes, thank you very much, that wasn't expected. Right, and that's why we love the game that much. So, anyway, on to the result. Right, so the result for me, look, I can't see past Argentina. I think the shackles are off a little bit more now. I think they'll express themselves. Look, and they'll dominate the game. They've just got to keep the back door locked like they didn't do against Saudi, even though they were comfortable for a lot of the majority of that game. They dominated against Mexico as well. I fully expect that again. They've just got to find a better way of breaking the door down. But I think the little magician will do it again.
Yeah, look, I think the safe money is on Argentina, but I don't think it's that safe. You know, I think a lot of people will be backing them, but basically because they're a massive superpower in football. But I haven't been impressed with Argentina thus far in this tournament. As you touched on, they're not creating overly many chances. I think they've been disjointed as a team. But as Scotty touched on, they've got one of the greatest players of all time. Any kind of form, any kind of analysis goes out the window when he gets the ball, because he can just do the unexpected and change the game in one moment. So for me, I think Argentina would just have that little bit of fight, and they definitely have the quality to get over the line. So for me, Argentina will come away with it, but I don't think it'll be easy by any means.
A big thanks to Michael Zullo and Scott McDonald. What a fantastic chat we've had today. If the World Cup is not enough of a football fix for you, don't forget the WSL continues live and exclusive on Optus Sport. The Gegenpod is daily during the World Cup, so remember to subscribe and rate us 5 stars while you're there. We'll be back tomorrow to break down the Socceroos game in detail. I've been your host, Teo Pelizzeri. Thanks for your company on the Optus Sport Football Podcast. This was the Gegenpod.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.